WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
All right, well, we have another possible crime that Donald Trump or people around him may have committed. This one relates to what I call a revenge audit by the IRS. This is a couple things to understand about this. And one, of course, is that what we have right now is something circumstantial and suspicious that is increasingly being focused on Trump and people around him. We don't yet know the full story, but this is Salon has reported on. The reality that both James Comey and Andrew McCabe were subjected to IRS audits. Now, these audits are very rare. And so to see two high-ranking FBI officials, both targeted by audits that have a 1 in 30,000 per year prevalence, it starts to raise some red flags. Former FBI Director James Comey and his top deputy, Andrew McCabe, faced rare intensive IRS audits after investigating former President Donald Trump, according to the New York Times. Comey, whom Trump fired in 2017, and McCabe, who was similarly as to Comey fired after investigating Trump, were selected for, quote, random audits known as autopsy without the benefit of death. These are like the most invasive audits. Out of about 153 million individual tax returns from 2017, only 5,000 people were selected for this type of invasive audit each year. Now, we'll get to the math, okay? But the point is, these are extremely rare. And for the former FBI director and the former FBI deputy director to both be targeted by these audits, it starts to be a little strange. Comey, McCabe, and their spouses defied the odds, being selected for the audit after being fired. The two men were selected for an IRS research program that uses compliance research examinations to try to catch tax cheats. Unlike typical audits, these audits force individuals to produce bank records, copies of checks, receipts, and letters, effectively recreating their finances for the year in question. This takes months and often costs thousands in accountant fees. In my experience, and I've not been audited, but in talking to accountants about it, it's more than thousands for this. This could be tens of thousands. The IRS said in letters to both men, your federal income tax return for the year shown above was selected at random for a compliance research examination. We must examine randomly selected tax returns to better understand tax compliance and improve fairness of the tax system. The minuscule chance of the two top FBI officials being selected at random raised questions about whether Trump appointees in the government or IRS purposely targeted them. Lightning strikes, and that's unusual. And that's what it's like being picked out for one of these audits, said IRS Commissioner, former IRS Commissioner John Koskinen. The question is, does lightning then strike again in the same area? Does it happen? Some people may see that in their lives, but most will not. Trump's spokeswoman has denied even knowing about these audits. Okay, so let's do some math. And I know the math is not easy on this. So I know that the math people will tell me whether I'm wrong. So first things first. If the odds of this audit is 1 in 30,000, or the odds are 1 in 30,000, if you say, what are the odds of two specific people facing the same audit, you would get one in 900 million, assuming that every person is equally likely to be audited. That doesn't really reflect the situation, in particular, because you would imagine that a large number of my guess is that even if we believe the audits are random, they're probably not being done for people below a certain level of income. And that would probably be for two reasons. One, that the amount that the IRS even stands to recover from someone who might have cheated on their taxes if they made 40 grand is very, very low. So that's one thing. And number two, the mechanisms that are often used to avoid taxes or evade, remember, avoidance and evasion are two different things. One's legal, one is not, are much more commonly used by people of higher incomes. So it's not even the right number because it's not the entire population that is probably even really at risk for this type of audit. It's some subset of that above a certain income level. Okay. But the other thing about this is that there's the missing context of, well, it's actually four people because it's these two guys and their spouses. And I believe they were in different years. So if your risk of this is one in 30,000 each year, if we look over like the 3-year period where Trump could have theoretically directed this or indicated someone should do this, then it's sort of like 3 in 30,000. It gets complicated. But I think what we have to understand are a couple things. One, this is very rare. And two, to see both of the top FBI people targeted with this supposedly randomly during a time when they were adversarial to the president who appointed people to the IRS. We know the president is one of the most vindictive and childish, probably the most vindictive and childish president that we've ever had. It is weird. And so I'm not ready to say Trump directed this. I'm not ready to say it was even necessarily within Trump's purview. But it's strange enough that it should be investigated. And one of the things we have to remember also is, like, imagine that it was something Trump did. In theory, this is a federal crime. But Trump really exposed how easy it is to just ignore all of the checks and balances on people in positions of power. And if this was a retaliatory IRS audit, whoever directed it, aside from whoever did it, should be investigated, should be charged if that's what happened. But Trump flouted all sorts of different norms and checks and balances. And at least for now, there have not really been any consequences. So we learned that the framers set up some checks and balances, but they clearly assumed no one would ever flout them. That's F-L-O-U-T. To the degree that Donald Trump did. And so how strong are those checks and balances if they can be ignored with essentially no consequences? We will continue to get answers to that. Yesterday, we talked on the podcast about how at this early stage, I mean, listen, it's not even an early stage. We're not even at the 2024 primary season. We're not even beyond the 2022 primaries. There have been some Republicans that are already endorsing Donald Trump, Jim Jordan, for example. We have also seen some Republicans declare they will not support Donald Trump, even if he does run. This is starting to get even weirder because Donald Trump has now signaled that he is running in 2024 in a bizarre Truth Social post in which he referred to himself as the future president of the United States. Seems very clearly to be saying, I'm running. Let's review this bizarre post. Trump writing, quote, "Why would a future president of the United States want to have candid and important conversations with his White House counsel if he thought there was even a small chance that this person, essentially acting as a lawyer for the country, may someday be brought before a partisan and openly hostile committee in Congress or even a fair and reasonable committee to reveal the inner secrets of foreign policy or other important matters? So bad for the USA." Trump really a legend in his own mind. So what is he talking about? I know you might see this and say, that's like a verbal ink blot. That, what is that? Trump is referring to his former White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, which I last week was pronouncing Cipollone. People very politely corrected me, and they said it is actually only pronounced Cipollone.
No more Drogba.
Exactly. We all make mistakes. So Trump here is saying, listen, this was the lawyer for the country. But that is a fundamental misunderstanding. The White House counsel is the president's lawyer. Now, in an ideal world, the president's interests are aligned with the country's interests. In particular, when Donald Trump was president, the country's interests and Trump interests were completely at odds. They were not in any way aligned. And so the idea that Pat Cipollone, by representing President Trump, is representing the interests of the country is nonsense. Now, the other thing is that he wasn't having the conversation. So he says, as a future president, I'm disincentivized from talking to my lawyer if I think my lawyer might someday be dragged before a committee. Trump's conversations with Cipollone when Trump was president were not conversations as a future president. If that was the case, you might be able to make a stronger argument that they are protected by attorney-client privilege. Cipollone can't be forced to testify. We wouldn't even be having this discussion. Trump was the president. Cipollone represented him. They were actively engaged in inciting a riot, trying to overturn an election Trump lost, all these different things. And of course, Cipollone's testimony would be eminently reasonable and relevant. And it's supposedly going to be happening behind closed doors. Cipollone today scheduled to be speaking to the House committee. Whether it happens, we will figure that out. Now, for one moment, I thought, did Trump mean as a future prisoner rather than as a future president? That's wishful thinking. I don't expect that to happen. Now, a few hours later, just to kind of close the circle on this insanity, Trump added some other strange comments in subsequent posts also related to the investigations into him, writing, quote, both of my phone calls to Georgia were perfect. Now, of course, those were the calls where Trump asked for votes.
I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break.
Trump going on and saying I had an absolute right to make them. And in fact, the story on the one call was given a retraction or apology by The Washington Post because they were given terribly false information about it. Now, that's not true. And when they heard the actual call, they realized their story was wrong. Thank you to The Washington Post. I, as does anyone else, just look at the Democrats, have the absolute right to challenge the results of an election, this one corrupt, rigged, and stolen. Continuing, saying, quote, I did nothing wrong in Georgia, but others did. They cheated in the 2020 presidential election, and those are the ones that should be investigated and prosecuted, letter to follow. And I have not seen the letter that supposedly follows. This is a desperate, unhinged man clawing any relevance that he can obtain. And of course, it's always the opposite. For 6 months, he said the Democrats are going to try to steal the election. He tried to steal the election. For months, he said the Democrats are going to mess with these ballots, dumps of ballots and mail-in ballots. And ultimately, it was Trump and his followers and his lawyers going around the country making bogus claims about those very mail-in ballots. The allegations are ultimately confessions with these guys. We've got to be ready for 2022, and we've got to be ready for 2024. Will we be ready? That's the question. Let me know what you think. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. The David Pakman Show is a viewer and listener supported program. You can support us most directly with very few intermediaries by signing up at joinpakman.com. I would love for you to do that. Let's hear from people in the audience. We take calls on the Friday show via Discord. You can find our Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. This is free. Everyone's welcome to call in. Discord is free. Calling in is free. It's all free. I've got nothing to sell you other than a good time. Let's start today. Wow. How about Nevin from Tennessee? Nevin, welcome. Nevin, you're on the air. I heard a noise, so I know you're unmuted. Welcome.
Hey, I was just asking about, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Nevin, please.
Okay, thank you. So I was just asking about, do you think it's a good strategy for Democrats to infiltrate like Republican primaries to try and get the least radical candidate nominated, like the Wyoming one with Liz Cheney? Do you think we should go into that primary, vote in it to get Liz Cheney nominated over the other guys?
Yeah, it's a case by case question. So Wyoming being so red, the winner of that primary will almost certainly be the winner. So in that case, I think it makes sense. There are other races where it's much tighter in terms of whether a Democrat or a Republican could win, and the efforts would be better served working on supporting the Democratic candidate. And sometimes you can have a situation where it's better for the Republican nominee to be crazier because it will help the Democrat, right? So you have to use your judgment. In the Liz Cheney example, it makes a lot of sense to me.
All right, thank you. That was all I had to ask.
How are things in Tennessee, okay?
It's a deep red state, so obviously not great. But
so not great, okay. Yeah. All right, well, keep on keeping on, my friend, all right?
Thank you.
Okay, appreciate the call. There's Nevin from Tennessee. It's deep red, so it's not going that well. You hate to hear that. You really do. Let's go. You know who we haven't heard from for a while? Our friend Tamisha in New York City. Tamisha, welcome.
Thank you. How is everything?
Everything's good.
I'm calling because I wanted to just quickly talk about the absurdity of the gun talk.
Yeah.
From right where they say, let's arm doors, lock doors and rooftops. But that whole premise doesn't make any sense because it would mean you would have to arm every public place. You would have to lock every public place.
Right.
And is that really realistic to have armed guards everywhere all the time? Wouldn't that be like a welfare state?
Well, it wouldn't be. It's not a welfare state. It'd be more like a police state.
Police state. There you go.
Yeah. 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 It's completely unrealistic. And, you know, the thing about it is, they never want to just say, let's try dealing with the guns. Like, we've talked about all this other stuff and we've said the issue's mental illness, but then they won't fund mental health. And then they say the issue's doors, but then there's an outdoor shooting. And then they say, well, the issue is fire escapes, but then there's one at a movie theater. You know, I mean, they want to just push around the responsibility and never deal with the guns. And you're absolutely right. It's like, well, I guess everybody should wear body armor at a parade. And everyone should wear a helmet at the movies. And like, how far is this going to go before we say, hey, you know what? Let's just try dealing with the guns.
And it's like most common sense people are not trying to take away guns. They're just trying to make it so crazy people don't get them.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, listen, there's some people who want to get rid of the Second Amendment. I take a more fatalistic approach, which is like, for now, we have a Second Amendment. Let's work within it. Let's require liability insurance. Let's make ammunition really expensive. Let's limit the guns that someone under 25 can have. Let's have a waiting period. Let's have a psych eval. Let's have more extensive training, all these different things. Let's just really make it so that only the cream of the crop, so to speak, can get the guns.
Well, that's where the common sense part comes in. But we're dealing with people without common sense. And that brings me to the next thing where I'm coming to the similar conclusion to you where our electorate is just not very bright.
Right.
It's like I talk to people and they talk about gas prices, inflation, and they talk about Democratic policies and, the left is too woke and the left is too crazy and radical. But then they very much ignore the radicalness that's on the right side.
Of course.
Like, there's so much craziness that goes on the right. And so much authoritarian, it's all ignored because I've even heard people that I know that are not Republicans that talk about how they like DeSantis, like you were saying with Rogan.
Yeah, with Rogan.
I'm like, really? And I don't like to play the race card, but I'm like, you're a person of color. I really don't understand. You support the LGBTQ community. I don't understand how you can support anything he stands for. Everything he stands for is against any of that.
Yeah, I think he has a zero rating on LGBT stuff. I mean, listen, it's really unfortunate, Tamisha, but we're in a world where most people are incompetent. And I know, it's so elitist and it's so condescending and it's so pompous. I mean, listen, at this point, I've worked with a bunch of real estate agents. They were mostly all terrible at their jobs other than two. At this point, I've had, you know, over 20, however many years of driving, how many mechanics have I had? They've mostly been terrible at their jobs. And now I know a good mechanic. I've had, it's so common that people are just incompetent or only minimally competent. And we're kind of trying to dance through this. And you know what? So I could be incompetent, too. I'm not even saying I'm exempt from this, but it's a reality that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I wouldn't say that I know everything, but I do try to be informed when I form opinions. I don't just form opinions based on what somebody tells me. I try to, you know, do my research and form an opinion based on facts. But it's just like some people just listen to propaganda or news outlets and they say, well, that's the way things are because they said it.
Yes.
And I'm like, But there's so much nuance. Even with the vaccinations, I hear people say, well, you could still get it. I was like, there's so much nuance that there's variants. People didn't get it at first, so it was allowed to spread. It's like there's so much nuance to it that it's not as simple as, oh, if you get the vaccine, you could still get it. So that means the vaccine doesn't work. That's just a simplified way to think of it.
100%. 100%. Tamisha, the kids are okay?
Yes, they both ace school, 90 high honors, so I'm very proud of them.
90 is good.
Well, 97, actually.
97? Oh, my God. Okay. All right. Well, great to hear from you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. There's Tamisha from New York City. Always great to hear from her. Let's go next to, you know, I kind of want to figure out what's going on in Florida a little bit. Let's go next to Jorge in Florida. Now, Jorge, are you in Florida or Florida? Hello? Jorge? Well, I guess we're not going to figure out. Let's try instead Manuel from Florida. Welcome.
Hey, nice to speak with you.
Likewise.
And Florida is doing just fine.
Is that right?
Pretty darn. Yeah, it feels like I'm walking out into an oven whenever I leave my house, though. So it's pretty hot down here.
Well, at least the house isn't so hot.
Yeah, no, that's true. The bills are pretty high because of that, but you know.
I bet.
We have to take it.
I'm curious, what's your top electrical bill in the summer?
So I have this like 1,500 square foot house, and in the summer it could get to $250.
Oh, I have to tell you, that's not that bad. And you're running the AC almost 24/7, I assume.
Oh yeah.
Okay, that's actually not that shocking. That's all right. Well, fair. I thought you were going to tell me $800 or something.
Oh wow, I didn't know electricity was that expensive in other places.
I think there are places where if you run the AC all every day, you can get some crazy bills. Yeah, but good. You're not. That's a problem you're not dealing with, at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, I did wanted to ask you this question. So I was speaking with somebody about, you know, this contentious topic of abortion rights and whatnot.
Yes.
And, you know, the topic tends to revolve around when life begins and stuff. And I've heard people say that science can't tell us when it begins. I've heard people say science can't even tell us when it ends. And I just get kind of concerned, and I wonder, is it practical for us to make such definitions, or should we look at life and death like in a nuanced way? And like, yeah.
Well, I don't think the solution is everybody agrees to look at when life begins in a nuanced way. I think what the issue is that even if we got some answer as to when life begins, it still isn't going to change anyone's mind if they're against abortion for religious reasons. If imagine that science said, hey, you know what? And by the way, the real issue is when are we talking about a person, not when life begins? I mean, no one would deny that a clump of cells is a form of life. The relevant question is, are we talking about a person? And if it's a person, does it get due process? Does it get citizenship? Does it get child support? Can you get the child tax credit when you're pregnant? You know, all these other things that are really about personhood rather than life. But imagine that science said, hey, life begins at 9 weeks and 6 days into the gestational period. Do we then all agree about abortion? I mean, in that sense, it's a red herring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And whenever I do talk about this, I do like to frame it in the personhood kind of way, right? Because, I mean, science is ever changing, and who knows, right? Like, we may understand that a 9-week-old fetus has a full conscious, right? But at the end of the day, we assign personhood and we value, like, the choice of the woman and her life and her safety in these ways, right? Regardless of that. But yeah, personhood is great. But I just get worried because it kind of makes pro-choice sound crazy when people say things like, well, we actually never know. Like, it's impossible to know. And it's also impossible to know, like, when people die. Like, and then it just makes things feel relative, and I don't know, I get lost in that.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, I think there's some value to the speed limit analogy, which is like, listen, sometimes to live in a society, we have to draw lines where there are gray areas. So you probably would have, imagine a road where you go, listen, 100 miles an hour, no one's going to say 100 miles an hour is a reasonable speed limit here. And no one's going to say that it's 5. We're going to set the speed limit at 40. And certainly if it's dry and clear, you could probably safely go 55. If it's dark and icy, you're going to have to go slower. But this is where we're kind of drawing the line. And when we get into these rare circumstances of like partial birth abortions, as they're sometimes called, late term abortions, everybody has a term that's loaded that they want to apply to it. And then they say, well, it's we're talking about a person at 7 months. And someone goes, well, here's one way where it would really be 6. And here's another way. From the standpoint of policy, sometimes lines have to be drawn when things are blurry. But this is a different question than if we got an answer to when life begins, then do we resolve the debate? The answer is obviously no.
Yeah, 100%. Well, thanks a ton for your time.
And thank you for the call. I appreciate it. All right. There's Manuel from Florida. Let's just stick in Florida a little bit because I am curious what's going on. Let's go to David in Florida. David, welcome. David
hey,
in Florida,
just wanted to
welcome.
Check if this is me.
It is you.
Cool. I love the show. I just wanted to have a question, something that was on my brain a while ago.
Okay.
You had asked a lot of the Republican or more Trumpian Republican side if they can answer the simple question of, you know, who's the president? Now, my thought was, isn't that a citizenship question if you can answer who the president is? I'm not saying to take away citizenship as the final result, but if they can't answer a simple question, you know, what are we doing here?
That's a good question. I don't know. Let's see. U.S. citizenship questions and answers. I don't know if who is the current president is on there. It very well may be. Name your representative, name your senator seems to be on there. I don't see who is the president. Let me see. Oh, no. What is the name of the president of the United States? Yeah, that's true. Well, listen, I don't think it'll come as a shock to you that lots of people who got citizenship by birth could not actually pass the citizenship test in the United States. I mean, we used to do like man on the street stuff where I would ask people, who's your senator, or name any senator. And tons of people wouldn't get those answers right. So this goes back to the thing I was talking about with Tamisha about, you know, probably 80% of people are sort of like incompetent to some degree.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
But I'll relieve any of the extra time I have to someone else from Florida.
Okay. Well, I don't have anyone else. What part of Florida are you in?
Down in Fort Lauderdale, about an hour north of Miami.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not a bad area. I mean, listen, if I had to live in Florida, which I'm, to be totally frank, it's not out of the possibility that I would in the future spend significant time in Florida, I would be in one of two places. I would either be in the Miami area or I would be in Pensacola, which I know sounds weird. It's like the panhandle, you know, but we've got some great friends up there. And, you know, there's a Jew or two in Pensacola. It's not just WASPy.
Of the two, I would have to say Pensacola would be the better choice. You can
really?
Probably get a little bit more land. It's probably a little bit quieter down in Miami. I'm looking at dinner tonight and trying to make a reservation. The reservation said you have to spend $100 per guest.
Is that right? What restaurant is that?
This was Sugar. It's just a nice view of Miami with some seafood. I wanted to do something a little nice, but maybe not $200 nice.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, have you been to Mandolin Aegean Bistro?
I have not. I'm going to have to look that one up, though.
That's a hot place if you can get in there. I love it there.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. There's David from Florida. We're going to take the quickest of quick breaks. If you're holding, don't go anywhere because I'm going right back to the phones in a moment. All right, let's hear from a few more people. When we take calls, we do so via Discord. You can find our Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's go to Ben from San Angelo. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hello? Can you hear me, David?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. Now I have a question to ask you about the U.S. presidency.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the C-SPAN's Presidential Historian Survey?
No.
Okay. Well, I really like it. It was last updated in 2021. It asks about 140 different, I guess, historians, what they thought about the presidents. And I guess my question is, do you think that using the survey here is a good way to sort of talk to others about, you know, presidents and the really bad presidents versus the really good ones?
I mean, listen, I'm looking at it now, and just to give people context, basically, the historians rank the presidents, and Lincoln basically is always number one. George Washington goes between two and three. FDR goes between three and two. Teddy Roosevelt is almost always in fourth. When you look at recent presidents, Barack Obama was ranked, I guess it's like around 10th. Trump is ranked fourth to the worst. The only people ranked worse than Trump per historians are Franklin Pierce, Andrew Johnson, and James Buchanan. Here's the thing. I think this is interesting, but if you try to tell someone who's like some kind of Trumpist or right winger about it, they'd go, the historians are just left wing shills, and they'll just ignore it, you know?
Okay. That was my question, but thank you.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. I mean, I hate to be like kind of cynical, but if they don't like what it says, they'll just say it's not worth listening to, you know? No. All right. Okay. Well, he left. I guess maybe my answer was not suitable. That's okay. Let's go next to Bobby from Jersey. Bobby, welcome to the show. Bobby from Jersey, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, David. Could you hear me?
Yes, now I can.
Tremendous. So what do you think about gun debates? It makes it so messy of a topic to debate.
What makes it messy? Well, I think that it's really a cultural issue. There are lots of people in the United States who are either so enmeshed in gun culture. And I will also say that there's people who are just viscerally opposed to guns for cultural reasons, that it's very difficult to get past it and to think about it like we would any other kind of empirical circumstance and say, OK, well, what is the likelihood of a defensive use of guns? And are we really curtailing the Second Amendment if we have some restrictions and, you know, all these different things? Now, I know where I come down on it. I mean, listen, I'm disgusted by what we might call, how do I say it? Like, kind of like rural right wing gun culture. I find it completely disgusting, and I want nothing to do with the folks who are part of that. But at the same time, it's not just for me about the guns. I have lots of friends who are liberal gun owners, and they're responsible, and they want licensing and insurance, and they're safe with their guns and all these different things. It's like, hey, we have a Second Amendment. You're not doing anything wrong. You're not kind of like a fetishist where you're fetishizing guns and whatever, all these different things. So I think because people are so ideologically connected to the issue, it prevents us from really speaking substantively. And I think if we spoke substantively, we would come down on we need way more regulations on guns.
Yes, I completely agree. And I feel it's, as you say, that it gets, it's pretty difficult to debate emotion rather than like over empirical evidence.
Well, that's going back to the conversation earlier about abortion. Imagine that we got an answer about when life begins or when a fetus is a person that was like scientifically definitive. First, no one, you will never have actual everybody agreeing with it. And even if we did, it wouldn't change everyone's mind about abortion anyway. So it's one of these things where the vast majority of the debate, even if you resolve it, won't actually resolve the broader issue.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like too many people have such a binary view on like a lot of issues, and I have,
for sure.
And that's something that really annoys me. Thank you, David.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you so much for the call. We're getting some solid calls today, guys. I have to say, let's hope nobody ruins it now. Let's go to Roman from Pittsburgh. Roman, welcome.
Hey, David, how are you?
Good, good. I have to ask, are you Ukrainian or Russian by chance?
You know, it's funny. I moved to Cleveland, and there's a lot of Eastern Europeans around this part. I'm Italian.
Wow.
There's a sandwich. Yeah.
You know what's so funny about I've never you would there's lots of people who are not familiar with the name Roman. And when you tell them my name is Roman, they go, that must be because you're Italian. And I've never met anyone with that name who's actually Italian. They're always Russian or Ukrainian. But you actually are Italian and your name is Roman.
Yeah, ironically, it's it was my parents' favorite chapter in the Bible. But I just there's a sandwich shop around here that makes a Roman burger. Mm-hmm. So I joke that, you know, they just were hungry when they were when my mom was pregnant. So
fair enough. All right. Well, what's on your mind today?
I just wanted to comment. I'm an ultrasound tech or a sonographer, depending on how fancy you want to be.
Okay.
And, you know, I have a lot of history scanning early pregnancies. So seeing all of these bills pass, it's very frustrating to see these people who obviously have no medical background trying to, you know, make any assessment on, you know, Roe v. Wade or anything like that. It's very frustrating. Most of the people I do ultrasounds with have no idea that they're pregnant. So
And I think this is interesting. There's two sides to this, right? One side of it is you often will have a panel of like 70-year-old men saying, we decide what's legal and abortion and all this, you know, OB care and all this different stuff. That makes absolutely no sense. Also, I think sometimes when we take this too far, we get into the stuff where, like, during the Iraq War, you had a lot of right wingers going, if you haven't been in the military, you can't have an opinion about this war. And it's like, no, you can actually. Actually, you can. So I think we want to balance both sides of this. But your point is very well taken.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where the medicine is, like, you know, really messy and, like, I think like even Joe Rogan, when he talks about it, he's like, oh, I'm pro-life or pro-choice. But he's like, it kind of gets really messy when you talk about like late term abortions. And I think that people really get mired in those details.
Yeah.
And like 80% of abortions occur like less before 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Like a quarter of pregnancies end before people even realize that they're pregnant.
Yep.
So I feel like there's a lot of misunderstanding of when abortions happen and like why they happen. Like just look, I mean, I'm not going to tell people to look up some of these complex medical things, but like hydrocephalus, it's not a viable thing. Like, I don't think that it makes sense to make someone carry a baby that doesn't have a brain to full term, but I mean, what are you going to do?
One of the other things that's often mentioned in this discussion is the right wingers will say, you know, it's crazy that you can walk in at 8.5 months pregnant and say abort. And when you actually talk to OBGYNs, they almost universally say, number one, never happens. Once you're 8.5, if you're given a due date at 40 weeks and it's 2 weeks before that, and you walk in and you go, I'd like to abort. First of all, OBGYN say it never happens. Number two, they almost exclusively say, I also wouldn't do it. At that point, you go, wait a second.
Yeah.
There's no medical condition threatening your life? No. Well, so why would we do that? Let's talk about adoption. Let's OBGYN say that's an imaginary situation.
Yeah. I mean, even at like 24 weeks, you can at least like, you know, stabilize a pregnancy. But like before that, I mean, like it's not even a conversation.
Hey, real quick, I'm curious because so you're in a situation where you're doing the ultrasounds for women who they may not even know they're pregnant. So why are they getting an ultrasound if they don't do what's the circumstance of them getting an ultrasound?
Yeah. So, I mean, we do a lot of different ultrasounds. I'm what they call a general ultrasound tech. There are like other ultrasound techs who specialize in only doing OB.
Okay.
Personally, like the late term stuff I feel bad a lot of times for those people who only work in MFM, because a lot of times they are scanning women who either have, you know, they're at risk for some reason because they're the most likely to come back for like follow-up scans. So that's, maternal diabetes / obesity, drug use, twins makes you automatically at risk, some sort of prior history of complication.
Sure.
For me, it's they come in through the ER and then they have some sort of indication, either pain, bleeding, They came in with a positive pregnancy test, and they had some sort of prior ultrasound, and sometimes they come in to like get a follow-up. I don't recommend that, coming in through the ER, especially if you're coming in from a different hospital system. We won't have that history.
Sure.
And you know, it's very rare that this happens, but just, you know, want to put this out there. Do not come to try to get pictures if you're coming in through the ER. We can't let you take pictures of the screen. It's like a legal issue, and like we don't have a printer because we're not designed to do OBs. You know?
Now, because you're a tech, you're not delivering the news, oh, hey, you're pregnant, right? You're doing the scanning, and then a doctor says, hey, this shows that you're pregnant?
Yeah. We write like a short little they call it like a tech assessment.
Yep.
And then the radiologist can either agree or disagree with our assessment. I keep my mouth shut, and personally, I kind of like that. The liability is not something I want. And like, I only needed, you know, two years of schooling. The 10 years and $100,000 worth of debt just does not seem worth it, you know?
I gotcha. All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you sharing about this. Super interesting.
Can I ask you a really quick question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think it's good for Democrats if Ron DeSantis runs?
Too early to say. Depends who he's running against. I know the point of the question, which is like, is he a better or more difficult candidate to defeat? I just think we don't know until we know who the Democratic nominee is.
Yeah, I thought maybe if he ran against Trump, that it might cause like almost a split ticket, like a bull.
Oh, in the primary. That's another question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just too early to say.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Very, very interesting, I have to tell you. Let's go next to Lahav from Greensboro. Lahav, welcome.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I'd like to ask about the system of government that we have in the United States, because in my opinion, you know, like multi-party parliamentary systems like in Germany or Denmark.
Yes.
And other countries. Well, I think that's a preferable system, because mostly because of the multi-party aspect. I mean, I have issues with the two-party duopoly. I'm curious, mm-hmm. just what do you think of the idea of a multi-party parliamentary system? Could it work here?
Well, whether it could work, I mean, I think the answer is it depends how hard we want to try. I think, of course, it could work. I tend to like the multi-party parliamentary system. You often hear as a stated downside of such a system that it makes it too easy for extremists to get representation. So imagine that, 5% of the vote goes to the KKK party, and that means that they would get 21 or some number of seats in the House of Representatives or something like that. But I think there's safeguards against that, and I don't think it's as big a risk maybe as some people believe it to me. I also see it as a way of, you know, we talk all the time, how can we break the duopoly? And often we say, well, you got to get rid of the Electoral College, and then you got to do ranked choice voting and fix campaign finance, you know, all these different things. A multi-party parliamentary system, at least at the House of Representatives level, might be a shortcut to breaking the two-party duopoly. So I'm very positive for a number of reasons on it. I'm not as knowledgeable about it as someone who maybe lives in such a system. So there may be downsides I'm not considering.
Well, one downside, like Israel, is the biggest downside I can think of, because what they have is each country has a cutoff for what percentage of the vote you have to get to receive seats. And in Israel, it is way too low. You get like 20 parties in government and an endless cycle of elections. It's a complete mess.
Right.
Other countries like Germany have a higher cutoff. Now, another issue, I actually support abolishing the Senate. Like, it's not democratic in its current form. I don't even see a better form of it. And if there was a parliamentary system, I don't see the point of a Senate.
Oh, I have ranted and raved about the undemocratic nature of the Senate. I forget the exact numbers, but I think it's something like the senators representing 17% of the U.S. population can form a majority because of how undemocratic it is. And I like you, when I think about how you fix the Senate, you're basically making it the House. So do you? Yeah, it's the Senate is a mess. I'm with you.
And final question. This one is slightly unrelated, but I always get annoyed with the media when they pretend that both sides are equal and this is just another partisan fight. And it's really not. So how do you get that sort of, I'll call it the both sides culture, out of the media, particularly corporate media?
You just have to repeat over and over again. This is not a both sides thing. So when corporate media has one person that understands and accepts the science of climate change and another person who denies it, and then you go, well, both sides, you guys kind of debate and see who convinces who. One side is not based in reality. And so that's just a matter of, I think if one is a guest in such a situation, you have to repeat that there's a false neutrality that being created here that's deceptive, but you've just got to keep repeating it over and over again. There's no other way.
Well, from their perspective, if someone, a climate denier, is going to go on to CNN and then the host will announce that they're a liar, they're probably not going to actually go on. So it might be a discreet way to stop these people from actually showing up on cable news.
Yeah, I can't think of what it is, but maybe you're right. Maybe there is a way.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. There is Lahav from Greensboro, and that is going to do it for calls today. We will take calls again, and I look forward to speaking to many more of you next time. Well, I have a bag of mail to review with you. It's not a literal bag. It's a proverbial bag, but it's a bag nonetheless. You can email info@davidpakman.com if you would like to get a message through to us. It may be featured on an upcoming episode. It may not. I'm going to start with this has to be a presented without comment because it's so wacky. But this is the sort of thing that I get every day. And one of the things that I wonder about is what must be going on in this person's life to think to write such a message to someone they don't know. Hey, you racist, liberal, lunatics, Peter, puffer, communist, socialist, socialism, culture, F. That's the F word. I hope you boy Biden F's you, you life, and all around you up. Cause if you retards, not a word I use, it's just verbatim. Cause if you retards believe that woman testimony in that S show here, what somebody told somebody told somebody, I overheard that, you all bunch of butt buddy do each other off air. So would you say this is truth? I would not say this is truth. I would not say that this message contains truth. The profile image has a NASCAR vehicle for this person who wrote in. All right, folks, let's continue. It's crazy out there. Dwayne wrote in and says, I can't believe you still defend the gene therapy. So, Dave, you getting the fifth or the sixth? I assume they mean vaccines. I don't know. Dwayne says, anyway, this is old news, but I wanted your opinion on a list of things Trump did. Just a few things to show he actually took them on, the elite. Obama, Hillary, Pelosi, blah, blah. The cutting taxes and regulations for small business. I couldn't tell exactly what taxes, but did he cut them? This person seems very confident in their confusion. Some people said they benefited. More money in their pockets, never mind the debt, $25 trillion to China funding the war in Afghan and Iraq. Okay, never mind that. Did you get more money? Did he lower taxes? My grammar is not the best. I have common sense over you high intellects with degrees. You can't get that from college. And I use short form like you and couldn't, okay? I'm not putting quotation marks like you freaks. I once met someone who used quotation marks. They were a freak. That's true. SEC cut funding from WHO, not on the agenda. If people think he's with them, a globalist, whatever. Globalists don't agree with some of things he did. So first is cut taxes. Second is cut money from WHO. Third, cut funding from NATO, not on the agenda. US was paying the most, not part of EU, not on the AG. So that's four. So now five NAFTA scrapped it. Yes, he agreed to another crappy deal, but not on the AG six Obamacare, which is scam. But I had a better one. So we'll say five for now. EU cut funding, can't remember details, but was getting out if had one again. That's six. There was one more, can't remember. Can you comment on those six? I can destroy the SE failed vaccine and the fake pandemic. COVID is real. The word pandemic is fake. That's another topic. Don't comment on my grammar. Instead of a comma, I can double tap the space bar and it's a period. I'm on my phone. Wow, folks, I can't do it. I think I might have to quit. These emails are driving me into retirement. All right, now for some more substantive things. Santa wrote in, hey, David, assuming Democrats don't find a way to codify Roe v. Wade into law anytime in the near future, do you think states where abortion is legal will have an entire industry of abortion clinics start to develop along their borders with states where it's illegal? If so, what other things do you foresee happening? Yeah, this is interesting because it reminds me when I grew up in Massachusetts, it was known fireworks were illegal. I don't know if they're still illegal in Massachusetts. Fireworks were illegal in Massachusetts, but legal in New Hampshire. So there would be fireworks stores right on the border of New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and people would drive there. It almost seems certain that we will see something similar with abortion. How would we not? How would we not? And the question that remains is whether states that ban abortion will try to prosecute those who leave the state and legally get an abortion elsewhere. I don't think there's really a legal basis for that. I've spoken to lawyers and they've not articulated to me. How would you do that? If you go to a state where an abortion is legal, it's sort of like if you go to Amsterdam and consume cannabis where it's legal and then come back to the U.S. to a state where it's illegal, could the state prosecute you for what you did in Amsterdam? Doesn't seem like it. So that's a question. But I think you will indeed see such an industry develop. And it's a horrible thing to think about. Mark wrote in about hearsay and asked, hi, David, is Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony hearsay? Please share your thoughts if you have a minute. It seems part of it could be and part of it not. Thanks for all you do and congratulations on your baby. So there's two answers to this question. Hearsay is a legal term relevant in courts of law. So the first question is, why are we even talking about hearsay in a congressional hearing? Hearsay is allowed in congressional hearings. So that's not an issue. Second part, there are people who, when they say, is it hearsay, you can tell, believe that if it's hearsay, it can't be believed. Sometimes hearsay is true. And so whether or not it's hearsay is a different question from whether or not Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony was accurate. And then third, even in courts of law, there are dozens of hearsay exemptions or exceptions wherein hearsay is allowed. So yes, some of Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony, if presented in a court of law, would be hearsay. That has no bearing on its truth, and it has no bearing on whether it is acceptable in a congressional hearing. Matt wrote in a comment on Tucker's June 28 show. Hi, sir. Heard your show on John Eastman on Tucker's show. Tucker said they're treating Eastman like a drug kingpin or a rapist. Shouldn't he have said a drug kingpin or a woman who just had an illegal abortion? I believe the punishment is far worse than the actual rapist. Just a thought. Yeah. So I think the point being made here by Matt is there are many who want to criminalize abortion. Usually they stop short of saying criminalize the woman's action. They will often say criminalize the doctor, etc. But point well taken. They are sort of relegating women seeking medical services to criminals. And that's crazy. A few other aggressive ones. Whose payroll are you on, a-hole? No matter what they're paying you, you're going against your country, you piece of S, F you. I'm not on anyone's payroll other than yours. It's the people in the audience who support the work that we do. So I guess I'm on my own payroll in that I own my own business, and I'm on the payroll of the audience because the audience funds the show. Beyond that, you know, whenever people talk about Soros or whoever else is paying me. Prove it. Prove someone other than the audience and our few advertisers are paying me. Please. Do you guys get triggered much? Because it seems like you do. Do you care on all the riots the Democrats did for the last 6 years? I'll wait for your response. Well, I have unequivocally denounced violence, and it has been something I've said regardless of who's doing it or the political orientation of those doing it. We know that in the United States, the overwhelming majority of politically motivated violence is perpetrated by the right, not by the left. Democrats did riots for 6 years. You're going to have to remind me about that. When there has been violence or criminality at whatever protest, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, anything, I say I'm against that. And if crimes have been committed, then people should be dealt with in the criminal justice system. And we saw nothing from them like what we saw on January 6th. So I hope that you weren't waiting too long, and I hope that I answered your question. Last one. You have a chance to see 2,000 mules, but I think you're, Y-O-U-R, afraid to watch. And read The Laptop from Hell, your president and his nasty son all over it. I have now talked about 2,000 mules three times. I think that is more than sufficient for how rigorous it is. Three times I've spoken about 2,000 mules. I have spoken about the Hunter Biden laptop now probably closer to six or seven times. I've basically said everything I think should be said about it based on what we know so far. If you think there's something specific that should be said that I haven't said, let me know. Maybe even call into the show. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com. That's P-A-K-M-A-N.com. To get instant access to the bonus show. You also get the daily podcast in either audio or video form, whichever form you prefer. When you are a member, that podcast full show is made available to you 5 or 6 hours earlier than we publish it to everybody else. And when we do our town hall events, you get priority access when you are a member. JoinPacman.com, coupon code BIGVOTING22. We will see you on the bonus show.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Folks, glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm running for Congress.
There is no turning it around at this point. You've won.
Joining us now is Representative Gabrielle Giffords.
Gabby was a star.
If an idea is a good idea, it's a good idea.
Your fiancé, Mark Kelly, who is who?
He's an astronaut.
I was the commander of Space Shuttle Endeavor at the time. Gabby knew the risk involved. Turns out she had the risky job.
Congresswoman Giffords was the target of the mass shooting.
I have just come from the University Medical Center, where our friend Gabby courageously fights to recover.
Typically, with an injury to the brain with a gunshot wound, it's less than 10% that they would even survive.
She's beginning several months of rehab.
Give me two fingers.
All right.
Give me five.
Gabby suffered from aphasia, which is a language impairment.
Gabby Giffords won't back down. Today, as mass shootings continue to rock the country, we'll look at a new film premiering across the country. It follows the former Arizona congresswoman as she fights to recover from an attempted assassination in 2011, deals with aphasia, and emerges as one of the most eloquent activists in the U.S. battle against gun violence. We'll speak with the film's award-winning directors, Julie Cohen and Betsy West, makers of the films My Name is Pauli Murray and the Academy Award-nominated RBG. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Mass protests in Sri Lanka have forced the country's president and prime minister to agree to resign as the country faces a dire economic crisis. On Saturday, thousands of protesters stormed President Gotabaya Rajapaksa's home and set fire to the prime minister's residence. Protesters have vowed to keep occupying the president's home until he formally resigns. Many people were filmed swimming in the president's pool. Demonstrators condemn the president for living in luxury while Sri Lanka faces an economic crisis.
To get rid of the president and the prime minister and to have a new era for Sri Lanka. Also, I feel very, very sad that they didn't go earlier, because had they gone earlier, there wouldn't have been any destruction. And it's time that we got all our stolen money back to this country. And also, the air conditions are running in that presidential palace while people don't have electricity in their homes.
Voters in Japan went to the polls for a parliamentary election Sunday, 2 days after a gunman assassinated former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe while he was campaigning for a candidate. In Sunday's election, Abe's right-wing Liberal Democratic Party won in a landslide, gaining enough seats with its coalition partners to form a supermajority in the upper house. By picking up more seats, the LDP appears poised to rewrite the country's pacifist constitution, which bars Japan from using or threatening to use military force. The rewriting of the constitution was a longtime goal of Shinzo Abe, something something he never accomplished while alive. Ukrainian officials say at least 18 people have died after Russian rockets hit a five-story apartment complex in the town of Chasiv Yar in the eastern Ukraine region of Donetsk. Rescuers say they fear two dozen people may be trapped in the rubble. Meanwhile, Ukraine's also accusing Russia of bombing a school and children's health center in Kharkiv. A meeting of foreign ministers of the G20 ended in Indonesia on Friday without any new agreements on the war in Ukraine.